Zinedine Zidane is on his way.
The Germans, and they're in trouble. Alcantara couldn't do it. Lineker probably could. And England have equalised. It's Gary Lineker.
Welcome, everybody, to the Final Countdown, a podcast looking back at great finals within the game of football. I am Lewis, here with my co-host, Adam.
I'm really going to miss Ness and Dormer.
I tell you what, we're going to need to find an absolute banger to replace
We got six more. I just worked
out. Is that all?
World Cups, yeah.
I think the demands of the people...
You got an email, have you?
It's more of, I will be so upset from a completionist point of view if we do all of them and then stop before the most recent. And hopefully enough time will have gone by that people want to relive it.
But even then, mate, Ness and Dormer's going to go, and then it's be like...
Oh, back to like pass and move us.
Can't go back, mate. We can't go back. You say we need something epic.
If we do stick with Ness and Dormer, I'm going to have to edit it because a minute and 10 seconds intro is probably a little bit indulgent of us. But if you've made it through the intro, thank you very much.
Yeah, sorry.
Welcome.
Hello.
So before we begin, I'd like to thank all of our new listeners this year. So
yes.
These are the first couple that we've recorded post Christmas and the new year. And we've noticed that listeners and everything is shot up a little bit. So if you are new, welcome. I would ask, and we don't do this ever, if at all, for you to review and subscribe because it really helps us. Mm. We'd love to get the pod out there to more people. We'd love to interact with our new listeners. So you can reach out on Twitter at finalcountpod or you can email us at finalcountdownpod@gmail.com. If you leave a review talking about a game that you love, we will do our best to cover it.
Assuming it has some relevance to final.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It doesn't have to be a final. But
just
it has
final
to
something.
Relevance to the final.
The final game, the final goal, the final mission.
The semi-final.
It's got the word in it, that'll do. So with that, Adam, we are going to focus on the 1998 World Cup final.
Today. Oh, yeah.
What do you know?
I was in the prime of life, mate.
Oh, yeah.
I was young, free, single, and inebriated a lot.
Ready to mingle.
not really.
As long as they were willing to listen.
That's
about
right.
Hristo Stoichkov.
That's right, yeah.
It's that nightclub meme where the bloke's talking into the woman's
ear.
Do you know who Just Fontaine is?
How many did he get in 1958? It's a fond memory because England were there, which was great. I was around 19 years old, which was great.
Yeah.
It was kind of like my golden era of watching. You know, I was no longer relying on my parents saying I could stay up. Put it that way.
Yeah, that's good. You could set your own bedtime.
That's right.
You're an absolute
bad watch
boy.
It if I want to. I'll watch it again if I want to.
That's so good. So we're going to get into it because I'm sure this won't surprise you, Adam, but I haven't told you beforehand. Whilst this World Cup final is a good game to cover and the tournament itself is a decent tournament, unlike 94, which we covered last week,
yep,
which was not vintage, this World Cup is really, as you kind of left as a cliffhanger from last week, about Zinedine Zidane and my favourite player of all time, and I'm throwing it out there now, officially, Ronaldo. And I do have a Ronaldo segment, which may or may not be 15 minutes of this podcast. So,
of course you do.
With that...
Do you want me to leave the room?
I don't even need you to be here. I don't even need the listeners to be here. This is my Christmas present to myself. So, 1998 World Cup was hosted in France. It was the first 32-team tournament.
Yes.
The first time it had been expanded. And the Stade de France was created for this tournament, which I didn't realise.
No,
so they had the Parc
that.
De France, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
But the Stade de France, the national stadium of France, was built solely for this because they were worried they didn't have a stadium big enough for the marquee event of the World Cup final.
Blimey.
This is the first World Cup where João Havelange has been replaced by Sepp Blatter.
Oh, good.
And we all know how it goes from here.
So FIFA got his act together and became pure in its operations.
So interestingly, obviously, Sepp Blatter, amongst many, many, many other things, is credited, and I use that word in air quotations, as being responsible for the commercialization of the World Cup and of football and of bringing it into the truly modern era in terms of sponsorships, partnerships, a commercial side of things. He is, it was his apparently kind of like that was his vision for FIFA. Obviously, we could make more money and everyone could make more money.
Yeah.
And largely that goes on to happen, but that has a rather sinister place in this final, but we'll get to that. So to warm up for the tournament, England, Italy, Brazil and France played a friendly.
Do you
remember what
it was
called?
The Umbro Cup?
It was the Umbro Cup.
Oh, Le Tournoi?
Le Tournoi.
We won it, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
Yes, we did.
It's our only bit of international silverware since 66.
Go on, the boys.
But we'll take it. So it was won by England. It was a round-robin tournament. There was also one other notable thing about Le Tournoi, and I'm being very vague. It's about a certain goal.
Oh, Roberto Carlos.
Roberto Carlos, yeah, the 33 metres.
What a goal.
33 metres, and he scores the banana free kick it starts 17 miles outside of France and goes back in. It is outrageous.
That is spot on,
It is just.
Barthez's face. Like, what the hell was that?
It's like it enters a wormhole and then reappears in the back of the net.
Great goal.
Everyone knows which goal we're talking about, but that wasn't... I think sometimes, when I was younger, I used to think, oh, that was in this World Cup.
Yeah.
But it wasn't. It was just the warm-up, the Tournoi.
It's a 30-yard free kick with a 20-yard run-up.
Dear, dear! I don't believe it! What a goal we have just seen from Roberto Carlos! That is amazing!
Watch this. Starts way, way, way wide of the goal. That's 2-3 yards wide. And just clips the inside of the post. That is quite a magnificent free kick. I'm not so sure we'll see one better than that for many, many a year. Quite exquisite.
Golden goal was brought in for this tournament, which would play a small role in the final.
Yeah, because Euro 96 had been decided by a golden goal, hadn't it?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
So it'd been brought in. This was the first World Cup with it in. But on to the two teams. So for those that don't know, this was a France-Brazil final. France had done well in the Euros 2 years previously. They'd lost in the semi-final on penalties. What you're talking about from last week's podcast, where France had been in the doldrums, hadn't qualified for 2 World Cups in a row.
Yeah.
They finally started to get their act together. But again, it took Zinedine Zidane, kind of his emergence, to drag France with him. Although we were starting to see the emergence of other players like Thierry Henry, who was at Juventus at this point and would obviously go on to Arsenal fame.
Yeah.
But they had a strong team. But even the likes of Frank Leboeuf wasn't Frank Leboeuf yet. He was a substitute for a lot of these games. But he would come on for the final.
Marcel Desailly,
exactly. Yeah. So they had great players, but this is the first time in probably a decade that they'd started to realise that potential. But yeah, following the disastrous failure to qualify for World Cup 94, they did have a strong team with Zidane kind of starting to give them a bit of confidence, especially knowing that they were hosts.
Yeah.
So alongside that, Brazil, however, were understandably favourites, not just because of what had happened 4 years earlier, but they also had the emergence of their own superstar, Il Fenomeno.
Here we go.
R9. Ronaldo Luiz Nazario da Lima.
A poor peasant boy. From the streets of Sao Paulo.
I am so happy we get to talk about Ronaldo. It was a mixed bag for Brazil in the group stage, it's worth saying, though. They struggled to victory over Scotland. So that was where...
I think I watched that, yeah.
Yeah, so they
John
they did
Collins
win.
Score.
I wish I could tell you. I hadn't done that much research. Yeah. But Brazil managed to win 2-1 against Scotland, but they left it late. They then convincingly beat Morocco 3-0, but lost shockingly to a Toure André Flo-inspired Norway.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah, so they lost their final group game, but they still had enough to qualify. Wow. So Brazil were exciting and were favourites, but they hadn't had the smooth sailing that a lot of people predicted, because everyone was expecting Ronaldo to be Ronaldo.
Yeah.
He doesn't score in the first game. He does score against Morocco. And from then, he kind of takes off.
Yeah.
France, however, were emphatic in the group stages. They beat Denmark, South Africa and Saudi Arabia, scoring 9 and conceding only 1.
Wow.
So France were kind of sending out a message. We are the hosts. We're not here. And Jacquet, the manager of France at the time, said that he was coming to this tournament to win, which not many managers, even nowadays, before
it's
a World Cup.
Out there,
exactly.
Yeah.
And it's not like he had, you know, if the Brazil manager said that, you'd understand.
Yeah, defending champions. He's like, mate, you weren't even here last time.
Exactly.
Pipe down, Jax.
What are you laughing about, mate? You weren't even there. But nevertheless, like... Jacquet said, we are here to win the tournament. So France did need, however, after their emphatic group stage, they did need a golden goal to beat Paraguay after drawing 1-1
really?
In the last
wow.
16. And it was Laurent Blanc. He was kind of the stalwart for France at the time.
Yes, il est dans la surface. Le centre est exécuté. C'est fini. But de Laurent Blanc. La France est qualifiée pour les quarts de finale de la Coupe du Monde. La lumière. Venu de Laurent Blanc.
penalty win against Italy gave them a semi-final against a Davor Šuker-inspired Croatia.
Croatia, yeah.
Which France would win 2-1. So they needed a golden goal against Paraguay. They needed penalties against Italy. And then they managed to beat Croatia 2-1. But Laurent Blanc, who we just mentioned, would be suspended for the final following a red card in that game. Oh, wow. So he was the heart of that defence, which is where Frank Leboeuf steps in because Laurent Blanc is suspended.
Right, okay.
So despite being host, France were second favourites, with Brazil seemingly playing the better football. And despite all the headlines being about Ronaldo, his strike partner, Rivaldo, was also having an excellent tournament.
Of course, yeah.
So, as Romario had retired not long before the start of this tournament, actually, Rivaldo and Ronaldo had stepped up. And the game, like you spoke about with Baggio and Romario, this game was billed about being about Ronaldo and Zidane. So, Brazil would beat Chile, Denmark, and then would need penalties to beat the Dutch in the semi-final. So, that was their kind of knockout rounds.
Right.
So, slightly easier with the likes of Chile and Denmark compared to France, who had had Croatia, who were a very good team at this point in Italy.
Yeah.
But Brazil couldn't stop conceding, but Ronaldo's goals were enough. So that was the thing, is even heading into the final, everyone was expecting Ronaldo to win the game for Brazil, but there were still concerns over their back line. Brazil had not kept it watertight and had conceded a lot of goals through the group stage and in the knockout rounds as well. But all of that really is just table setting. For a meal for two, myself and Ronaldo.
I was going to say, I'm definitely not on that table.
So I'm literally hijacking this whole thing, because we will get to the game, but just to talk about how good Ronaldo was. He was the greatest of all time before his injuries, but let me just give you the
Are you saying that? Are you saying he's the best player of all time?
I'm saying if he hadn't got injured, he would have been the best player of all time.
Right.
He would have been better than Messi, Ronaldo.
He's out there, mate.
Maradona, Pele. I honestly think he had... I've never seen a player like him. Maybe it's recency bias. I'm sure people that grew up watching Maradona and watching Pele would go, you're an absolute idiot and you've smoked crack. But for my money, certainly my generation, but let's just give a bullet point of Ronaldo's life and career, because I'm so excited just to get to talk about
just
him.
Just fast forward like probably 4 minutes, guys.
4 minutes. Let's try eight.
Often when Lou thinks things are going to be great and last for ages, it's about 4 minutes.
4 minutes includes crying, right? So, moving swiftly on, Ronaldo was spotted by Jairzinho.
Was he really?
He was. No he way. Was found by Jairzinho at age 14. He would then be playing for the under-17 and under-20 teams whilst only 15 years old.
Of course he was.
He scored 44 goals in 47 games in his first season in adult football for Cruzeiro in Brazil. He was just 17 at the time, so 44 in 47 games. He was selected at the 94 World Cup, but he didn't play.
I was just about to ask that. Yeah,
so he was very much a young Pelé, right. But he wasn't brought on.
That's strange for Brazil.
Yeah, exactly. But then they had Romario, so you know maybe they didn't need him.
That's true, yeah.
But then he signed for PSV following his first adult season for Cruzeiro, following advice from Romario. So he was kind of following in his footsteps. Romario played for PSV for a number of years. He would score 54 goals in 58 games over two seasons, despite having the first of many, many knee injuries.
Wow.
So 54 in 58. Just absolutely unreal. He's only played men's football now for 2 years, but absolutely astounding stuff. At 20 years old, he became the world's most expensive footballer, signing for Barcelona, who were managed at the time by... Come on, mate. It's a home run for us on this podcast.
Bobby Robson?
Bobby Robson.
Was it really?
Bobby Robson saw him and said, I want a little bit of that.
Was he not also manager at Eindhoven?
He was, but the times didn't line up. But yes, right. He did manage PSV, which is probably why he had the inside track
to
get him.
Yeah.
So he becomes the world's most expensive footballer. He only plays one season for the Catalonians, which is a bit surprising. Still manages to score 47 goals in 49 games.
Why on earth did they sell him?
So there was controversy where a month before the end of the season, they said, we are signing Ronaldo for a much longer contract now. Because he was signed initially on very low money because despite being the world's most expensive footballer, he was still only 20 years old. Obviously, he has the season he has. 47 and 49 in his first season there.
That is incredible.
Absolutely astounding stuff. And they give him an enormous pay rise. Apparently, there was a change in board of directors. And when they looked at the verbally agreed contract with Ronaldo, they said, nobody should be earning this much money. This is ridiculous. And they reneged on the deal.
Wow.
So with that, another world record transfer came along as Ronaldo moved to Inter Milan at the height of Serie A's global dominance and their defensive prowess.
Yeah.
So this was the real test. It's like, okay, even for Barcelona, which is an astounding club and all that, this was Serie A when it was the league, what the Premier League is nowadays.
Yeah, yeah.
All the defensive prowess, the best defenders in the world. Like, if you scored 15 goals in Serie A, that was a hell of a return. And yeah. really, at this point, you've only got Christian Vieri and Gabriel Batistuta, the only strikers that managed to score more than 20 goals a season, because it's just so difficult to score.
Yeah.
So during a Serie A match against Lecce, Ronaldo felt his knee buckle and he was forced to limp off the field. A medical exam confirmed the striker had ruptured a tendon in his knee and he would require surgery.
Ooh.
So this was during his first season for Inter Milan.
Yeah.
During his first comeback in 2000s, he played only 6 minutes during the first leg of the Coppa Italia before suffering a complete rupture of the kneecap tendons again.
Oh, man, can you imagine that?
So 6 minutes after being off for about 8 months.
What physio sent him back on, though? Yes. He obviously wasn't ready.
I wish I knew. I don't know enough about that, but it is heartbreaking for him to come back, yeah. work so hard.
What year is this?
This is 2000.
Right.
So Ronaldo's physiotherapist, Nilto Patrone, said his kneecap actually exploded and it is the worst football injury that I have ever seen. Ever. This was obviously early 2000, so before the time of, like, when you had an ACL or something of that thing, yeah. it could have been a career ender.
Yeah.
So it's not that far removed from this. Absolutely terrible. So prior to his first knee injury, Ronaldo had registered 42 goals in 58 Serie A games.
Wow.
So he was scoring literally double any striker of that era.
Yeah.
It was absolutely astounding stuff. He would be injured for 2.5 years at Inter and was never the same again, despite still going on to be a world-class striker. So his injuries would continue to plague him, but his time at Inter Milan, he played 68 games and scored 50 goals
wow.
across a five-year period. Yeah, yeah. And he was injured for 2.5 years altogether
yeah.
with very little kind of...
So was he at Inter when in 2002 World Cup? He must have been.
So, 2002 World Cup, he was at Inter.
Right.
But then shortly after, in October, he moved to the Galacticos of Real Madrid.
That's right. I remember that.
This is post-injury Ronaldo, and this is really where he's still a world-class striker. He's still one of the top three strikers in the world, but he's not the new Pelé Maradona that he would have been after this. However, he moves to Galacticos. Ronaldo scored twice on his debut against Alaves, the first 61 seconds after coming on. So this nice. the guy's business is goals, and business is looking good. That's what I'm saying. Absolutely outrageous stuff from him. So he would then score a hat-trick against Man United at Old Trafford, knocking...
Oh, I remember that. Unbelievable.
Yeah. So he completed his hat-trick with a strike from 30 yards and was substituted off after 6-7 minutes, was given a standing ovation from both sets of fans.
Yeah.
Yeah, you knock Manchester United out of the Champions League and their fans applaud you.
Yeah.
But he was that unplayable at the time. He would be top scorer for Real Madrid in all four seasons at the club, which a lot of people talk about this being like the beginning of Fat Ronaldo and all those jokes, and he's past it a little bit. But he's still in the Galactico good. Era of Real Madrid with Zinedine Zidane and David Beckham and
Vigo,
yeah,
Carlos.
Exactly. He is still top scorer in every season he plays for them. He scores 104 goals in 177 games.
Wow.
So AC Milan would be his final destination in Europe, but again, he couldn't stay fit, and this is where the Fat Ronaldo things really comes about. But in his first start against Siena, Ronaldo scored twice and assisted on a third goal. Assisted a third goal in his first start for Milan. Ronaldo then suffered a season-ending knee injury, so it's the fourth one of his career.
Not the same knee, surely.
Same knee. The club confirmed after the match Ronaldo had ruptured his knee ligament. He only plays 20 games for AC Milan because of these injuries. Still scores 9 goals, so he's still getting 1 in 2, which for any elite striker is a great volume of goals. And then eventually he returns to Brazil to rehabilitate. He signs a contract with Corinthians, despite now being a shadow of his former self. He scores 8 goals in 9 matches, which leads to a call from the Brazil team to call him back up, despite the fact he's very much in the world's view kind of past it. 70% of respondents in a poll on the biggest newspaper in Brazil suggest that he should be reinstated, with the country's president Lula also calling for his immediate return. He ultimately didn't get called up, but he did help Corinthians win the Campeonato Paulista, which is their league, scoring 10 goals in 14 games during his first season. He would go on to play for Corinthians through 3 domestic seasons. He scores 35 goals in 69 games, so still doing a goal every other game when he is overweight. He doesn't have knees
that exist anymore. Yeah.
He's basically just got buffers that are somehow keeping him standing upright.
Yeah.
So this is the Ronaldo we're talking about, a guy who scored goals everywhere he went. Thank you for indulging me. Listeners, I'm so sorry if that bored the crap out of you.
So this isn't a World Cup podcast. Come back next week for 98.
We're pulling back into the World Cup now. So with my love letter to Ronaldo being signed, sealed and delivered with a kiss, we will now go into the game.
Well, footballing genius, nothing less. We're watching an alien play this game of ours, the likes of which we've never seen before.
The most controversial moment at this final happens before a ball is even kicked.
Yes.
So
John Motson loses his shiz.
Exactly. So he talks about the chaos in the commentary box and the chaos in the media area, and people do not know what to do with themselves. So for anyone that doesn't know, Ronaldo was initially named on the team sheet, as expected, only for a late update to show that he had been benched with no explanation whatsoever. Chaos ensues in the press as well as the stadium, and eventually Ronaldo would then be named in the starting lineup and would play for the whole game. So nobody
knew at the time. For the whole game.
Yeah, doesn't get substituted. It isn't brought on as an impact sub. He literally just gets flogged for 90 minutes. The official line is that teammates Roberto Carlos and Edmundo found Ronaldo on the floor of their hotel bathroom, fitting and convulsing. They intervened to stop him swallowing his tongue, and he was completely unresponsive afterwards, with Edmundo calling for the doctors with shouts of, "He's dead, he's dead."
Wow.
So the biggest drama you can imagine, but apparently Ronaldo had shown no signs of being ill or of being in distress or anything like that, is the official line. Ronaldo eventually woke up with no memory whatsoever of what had happened, and he just napped until the team had to leave for the stadium, with Ronaldo saying that he felt well enough to play. So that's the official line. What actually happened, nobody ever really knows.
I was going to say,
There are conflicting reports, but just a few. This is conspiracy corner.
Yeah, let's do it.
So just a few conspiracy theories, and I'll ask you which one you think is likely. Yeah. So according to The Independent, the Brazilian Football Federation and their president, Ricardo Teixeira, under an £18 million sponsorship agreement with Nike, had walked into the team's dressing room.
This is what I've heard. Yeah.
About an hour before kickoff, 20 minutes later, Ronaldo arrived and Mario Zaglo, manager of Brazil at the time, took Edmundo's name off the lineup, and Nike was said to be forcing him to play for commercial purposes. Yeah. Ronaldo was one of the first footballers to really be heralded as, like we're used to it nowadays with certain footballers being linked with their brands.
Yeah.
But this was really the pioneer of it all, and Nike couldn't afford on the world's biggest stage to not have.
Yeah.
They literally, like, people refer to him as R9, which I say tongue-in-cheek, but it was part of his branding.
Yeah.
Of these are the boots he wears, this is his number, this is who he is. So yeah, there were talk that the Brazilian Federation had lent on Zaglo to, you have to play him because it's worth 80 million to us. One of the other theories is that he has had an existing medical condition for his life that has never been disclosed. So many doctors have admitted that they often gave Ronaldo various pills to manage his pain and for undisclosed symptoms, even before he'd ruptured his knee.
I was going to say, surely after his knee, that's understandable.
I'm sure he was medicated to high heaven to get through the games he had to. But even before hit the worst of his knee injuries in 1999, people were talking about that Ronaldo was often being medicated, was often spending a lot of time with doctors. So whether he had some kind of medical condition that wouldn't have allowed him to be insured to play in Europe or other leagues. So people saying that actually he's probably had these things before, but Ronaldo has never admitted to that, and there's never been any evidence. The third option is that he had a nervous breakdown from the pressure of the world's press, especially from those back in Brazil. Obviously, he was the poster boy for Brazil, and we've spoken about in this podcast what happens when Brazil get to a final and they lose, especially that shock loss to Uruguay.
Yeah.
Like, they had won, and they had won, and they had won every final they'd got to since Uruguay.
Yeah.
And there was that fear of, what if I'm the person to let them down? What if I do a Baggio? What
if you buy that one? I'm not sure I buy that one. So, a professional footballer.
I don't buy it. However, Roberto Carlos did tell the BBC, Ronaldo was scared about what lay ahead. The pressure had got to him, and he couldn't stop crying. Although he would later claim that this was incorrect. So Carlos tells the BBC that he wouldn't stop crying, and that he was... this in the hotel before the game. He was scared about what lay ahead, but then later retracted that. So take from that what you will. So before the fit, he's saying that he was crying and having a bit of an emotional breakdown, but he kind of retracted that later on. So I don't know for what reason. The final conspiracy theory is that the Brazil squad were offered £15 million to throw the game, as well as the right to host a future World Cup in exchange for throwing the match against France. So part of that agreement is also said to include a guaranteed favourable draw in 2002. Ronaldo, uncomfortable with the agreement, pulled out of the squad, but then changed his mind after Nike told him he was risking his sponsorship money.
Wow, that one's far-fetched. Not my,
that's the real tinfoil hat.
Yeah, there's so many moving pieces in that. I just, I don't buy that one. The Nike one is the most believable one.
And that's the one I've heard most often, is that he did have the fit, But it's not that he just then said, oh, actually, I'm well enough. It's that he was in no fit state to play.
No.
And Nike said, your financial like future is tied up in you getting out on that pitch.
Yeah.
So is that what you're going for?
It is, mate. I think, you know, with it's like Zagallo and the rest of it, like, is a million, get him in the team type thing. Like, I just think that's the most believable.
Yeah.
Like, we like to think the world isn't that way, but I think it probably is that way.
And I'm inclined to agree with you as well. One of the other things as well is that Mario Zagallo said, can you imagine being the manager, not picking Ronaldo and losing? So he was very aware of the headlines. He was thinking of the optics. What will this look like if I don't pick Ronaldo, we go to lose? He was quite selfish, thinking like, I'm going to be the person hung out to dry here if I'm the one who says no to Ronaldo, even if I think it's in his best interest.
Was he still manager in 2002 then? No, Scolari.
Yeah, Scolari, exactly. Regardless of the reason, Ronaldo that played against France, he was a shell of himself. Yeah. He was hollow.
He wasn't in the game.
He wasn't. So it's worth saying that France played excellently through the whole game, and we'll get into the actual nuts and bolts of what happened in the match. So Ronaldo is now in the starting lineup. Edmundo's been binned off, which...
It's difficult to believe that there isn't a conspiracy theory that none of the... Because there would have been about 20-odd people would have witnessed whatever went on in the dressing room beforehand. That no one's written a book.
Yeah, only outsiders have ever written books. Nobody's ever come
clean. It does make you think there's an NDA involved, doesn't it?
It is, like you say, it's very strange.
I can't believe no one has ever said, I'm going to say what happened.
Even with autobiographies, they're all like, and obviously we were shaken up by what happened with Ronaldo, and then they move past it. It's not like people talk about it in depth. It's very much like, and then the Ronaldo thing happened, and then we lost the final. And
that's why, again, why I believe the Nike, because it would take that kind of power to silence that many people.
I don't want to, just as much as this entire podcast has been about Ronaldo, I do want to talk about the fact that France were excellent. So they almost scored within the first minute when Gavarch narrowly misses with a bicycle kick. So 1 minute in, France almost get a shot on target and just dips over the bar. Gavarch then had another opportunity 3 minutes later when he receives a pass from Zinedine Zidane on the edge of the penalty area. He's one-on-one with Taffarel, but was stopped by the goalkeeper. So Taffarel, again, getting the plaudits. He was great tournament.
Yeah.
Great this tournament. And he's a goalkeeping coach for the greatest club in the world, Liverpool Football Club, as well.
At the same time.
He basically got brought on because he's best mates with Alisson. That's why we hired him. Because it's like, you want another Brazilian to keep yourself company? Yeah. Sure.
It's like Ricky Villa all over again.
It's exactly that. France continued to press, with the only real chance of the first half for Brazil being a powerful header from César Sampaio, but that's headed straight towards Barthez. France would, however, take the lead just before the half-hour mark, with Zinedine Zidane out-jumping Brazil's Leonardo to power a header from Petit's corner, and it's definitely a deserved lead. Ronaldo would attempt a speculative effort a few minutes later, but Barthez punches that clear upfield. And then just before half-time, Emmanuel Petit has the chance to double France's lead, but he couldn't convert a rebound that fell right at his feet. He's a bit off-balance, can't quite knock it in. Gavarch is denied another one-on-one by Claudio Taffarel, but their persistence would pay off. So it's a real blitz at the end of the first half. Thanks to a second goal in similar fashion, Zidane again heading home from a corner, but this time from Youri Djorkaeff.
Oh,
always a nice mention.
Bolton?
Yeah, Bolton fame. All of the fuss, the hype about Ronaldo, and Zidane has quietly gone about...
That was the headline I remember. Not necessarily the headline, but that's what I remember about the game, is all this noise about Ronaldo and Zidane just got it done.
Yeah,
and that's how I remember this final.
It's exactly that.
Like, you shout, you make the noise, I'm just going to win this World Cup.
Yeah, and he is the heart of this French team, not just because he scores two of the three goals.
No, he was brilliant.
But the whole thing, and like you mentioned, even from his debut, it was clear that Zidane had something that no other player has ever had, really, that X factor.
Yeah.
He's an entirely different player to your Messi's and your Maradona's, your Ronaldo's, but... His influence on the game, the aura that he had, was something else.
Yeah.
So the second half was a more even affair, though, Brazil trying to get back in the game. So Bebeto takes a corner, which reached substitute Danielson, who, do you know what was famous about Danielson for a very small period of time?
I remember him, but I can't remember why.
World's most expensive player, signed for Real Betis, but never really did anything. He was one of the very few Brazilians that didn't actually live up to his hype.
Right.
He fell down under pressure from Didier Deschamps as his shot goes wide, and Brazil players appeal for a penalty, but the ref did not award it. So Deschamps, a man who would later go on to...
He's manager now, isn't he?
And win two World Cups.
Yeah, he's been manager forever, isn't
he? Yeah. Even though people are very unimpressed with him, because they're like, he should be more attacking and all this kind of stuff. Much like, I think we spoke about Cantona calling him the water carrier, saying that he didn't have any respect for him.
Right,
very bland.
Yeah.
Deschamps gets the job done.
He does.
Say what you like about him.
Yeah.
Rivaldo then played a free kick short for Roberto Carlos, who ran to the edge of the penalty area before crossing it, and it reaches Ronaldo's feet, but his shot from close range goes straight to Barthez, and it's saved with relative ease. And you can see he's just not sharp. Yeah. He's not really present.
Yeah.
On 63 minutes, Gavarch is again one-on-one with Taffarel following a mistake by the Brazilian defence, but he fires his shot wide of goal. So 3 minutes later, Gavarch finally... it. Yes. Always worth bringing that up. I hope it haunts his nightmares.
Yeah, not at all relevant, but I wanted to mention it.
Always worth a mention. So Gavarch, after missing 3 one-on-ones, is finally taken off with Christophe Dugarry taking his place. On 68 minutes, Marcel Desailly makes a sliding tackle on Cafu, which is given by as a foul, and he's shown his second yellow card, which meant that France had to play the last 20 minutes. Only 10
Do you
men.
Not remember that?
I had
what
no...
What is it about sending offs in World Cup finals? It I never
crazy.
Remember them.
I have no memory of this, to the point that I had to go and find footage because I was like, I don't think this report's right. And I went and found footage. It's
so
crazy.
So they were down to 10 men when they scored the third goal?
Yeah.
Wow.
Really astounding. So Marcel Desailly joins the list of people that were sent off in a World Cup final. However, despite this, France didn't seem to be in too much trouble. Brazil... just cannot get the rhythm together, clearly shaken up by whatever had happened pre-match.
Yeah.
And in the end, Patrick Vieira, a young Patrick Vieira, is brought on to add some defensive ballast. Late on, Christophe Dugarry is through on goal with only Taffarel to beat, but his shot goes wide of the goal. Again, Taffarel, one-on-ones. He absolutely loves it.
Does love it.
A few chances that could have humiliated Brazil if they'd been more clinical. Mm. So France had chance after chance after chance after chance of good opportunities, and because they didn't take them, even though they win 3-0, because spoiler, they go on to get a third one. Brazil have a chance to score an injury time when Danielson's shot hits the crossbar, but cruelly, however, with Brazil pushing players forward to try and get a goal, Emmanuel Petit scores for France after receiving a pass upfield from his Arsenal teammate Patrick Vieira, the substitute.
I remember that.
A really good counter-attacking goal. Emmanuel Petit just cool as a cucumber, and he scores for France, making it 3-0, and they are crowned world champions for the first time.
Well, you have just witnessed 90 of the most gripping minutes of European football you will ever, ever see. But the good news is there's more to come.
So into our extra time round, just a few things to polish off. So the 3-0 scoreline was also Brazil's largest loss in the World Cup until their 7-1 defeat in Germany. So
In the World Cup as a whole?
Yeah.
Wow.
They'd never ever lost by a 3-goal margin before, which is astounding, isn't it? They've been in since the first ever World Cup. And this was their biggest ever defeat, but it comes on the final stage until obviously their 7-1 humiliation in 2014. Organiser Michel Platini. I was amazed at this confession, but I shouldn't be. Organiser Michel Platini, who later become president of UEFA, admitted in 2018 that the draw for the group stage of the competition had been fixed. So that France and Brazil were kept apart until the final. He just admits it. This is a direct quote from Platini. "We did do a bit of trickery. When we were organising the schedule, we did not spend 6 years organising the World Cup to not do some little shenanigans."
You're joking.
So he admits to keeping France and Brazil away from each other.
How is that not bigger news?
Well, add it to the list of things that FIFA have done of all that. But yeah.
Yeah, but that's not grey. He's admitted it.
I know. Astounding. And me and you are big football fans. This is news to both of us. Somehow, even though that was confessed to 4 years ago, people are just like, "Oh, you little scamps." Oh.
I'm just surprised that hasn't made more waves. Like, there's enormous amounts of money involved in World Cups and winning them.
Yeah.
And that's essentially fixing to some degree. That's crazy.
I wish I could say something to defend it, but it is just as scandalous as it sounds.
I really liked Platini when I was younger.
Yeah.
I think he's a right prick.
I was about to say he's completely tarnished it, but yeah, he had something about him. But a quick mention, two last facts of extra time. Quick mention of England's drama in
1998. Oh,
so getting sidetracked.
You've got a whole podcast on this,
exactly,
mate.
Sidetracked by my love for Ronaldo. It's worth noting that obviously we lost to Argentina in the last 16 on penalties following Michael Owen. His debut, debut World Cup goal.
No, he scored against Romania in the group game.
Is that right? There we go. I knew you'd know that. You're so bankable. What a dependable man you are. So talking about dependable, great commentary from John Champion. I don't know if you remember
John Champion. Yes, I do.
18 years and 190 days old. Just think what he'll be like when he grows up. That's a great bit of commentary there.
Yeah, that is good.
Scores an amazing goal. But
if Brian Moore's commentating, change the link. It's a terrible commentary. It just, a goal like that deserves good commentary.
Exactly. It's the kind of thing you wish that Peter Drury was on now. Can you imagine the poetry flowing from his lips?
Absolutely.
And then the final thing, do you know the top goal scorer for this tournament? And it wasn't a Brazil or a France player.
Davor Suka.
Very good. For how many?
I want to say 8. Is it 6 or 8?
It is 6.
6.
Very good. So thank you, listeners, for joining me on what is undoubtedly a love letter to Ronaldo. I hope
I was here too, but yeah. I don't really want to be for parts of that.
I feel like I just transcended into another plane of existence. If it hasn't made you happy, listener, it's made me very happy. So join us next week as we cover the 2002 World Cup final.